You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and today I have my very good friend, one of the people that have mentored me. If you listened to last week's episode, I talked about people that were important in my comedy career that have helped me out, and Agustino Zoida is probably one of those biggest influences as well. He's been there for me, kicked me in the butt when I needed it, kind of, you know, just called me out on stuff, helped me work on jokes. I've reworked jokes for him. I just did a set, you know, the other week based on some of the notes that he gave me, and it went amazing. My wife literally said, "That's the best set you've ever done."
Like, no way.
Yeah, she literally said, I recorded it, I sent it to her, she goes, "That's the best set you've ever done." I was like, "It," and there was only like 8 people in the room, but it just was like a whole nother level.
Just things were clicking, right?
It was just going, you know, so it was great. So obviously, you know, thank you for being on the podcast again, my friend.
Oh, no worries, dude. I'm glad it's going good.
It is going great, and that's why I'm very excited to go for Darren. So the goal is go with Darren, do those 3 shows, murder, right? Because I have people that I grew up in Texas, so I have people that know me from childhood coming to see me do stand-up that have never seen me do stand-up before. So if I don't murder, it's gonna be bad. Like, I'm gonna look like an idiot. So I've really been working hard. Yeah, I'm excited. So I've been reworking stuff and just doing it. And then that goal is to have a good tape for one of those shows and send it off to the people at Dry Bar and then get that approved and get that process going and get the Dry Bar going. So then do more
things.
Nice,
man. I was just telling somebody today that like my least the only time I ever really get nervous anymore, like really, really nervous, is when I have friends and family in the crowd. It's the worst.
My grandma's coming, and my childhood best friend just texted me today and said, "Hey, man, I got tickets." Like, we've been friends since we were like in first grade. And like, he was like my big brother. He would always look out for me. I was a small kid, tiny kid. Yeah. But I was a kid with the biggest mouth. So I would like, and he would fight all my fights for me. Like, I didn't ever have to fight as a kid. He would beat up people for me.
Well, that's going to be fun. Like, that's going to be awesome. No, you're going to have a good time. But I mean, your grandma would make me nervous.
My grandma's the coolest, though. My grandma's literally the coolest person ever.
I would get nervous if I was performing in front of your grandma.
No, you wouldn't, because my grandma is like super cool. Like,
she's down.
Legitimately the coolest person ever. Like, I used to watch Stripes with my grandma. Okay. Like, nothing's gonna, my grandma, this is a true story. My grandma rented Pretty Woman when it first came out, and we watched it not knowing what it was about. Now imagine watching Pretty Woman with your grandma. I don't know if you remember that movie. Do you remember sequence?
Yeah, the opening sequence
where she busts out all the con. Like, legitimately, I watched that with my grandma. It's the most uncomfortable moment of my life. And I was like, it was like most uncomfortable movie of my life. But I've also seen Rumble in the Bronx with my grandma. Waterworld is one of our favorite movies that we've ever seen together. Like, legitimately, she is like the coolest person, and she was. You know,
oh, well, that's awesome, dude. Yeah.
I'm not worried about that.
I get in my head, like, I've done shows where like another comic's father was in there and mother, and they were older, and I'm just like, you know, I mean, you know me, I could be a little controversial or edgy or dirty, and like certain, I'll say stuff, and I'll be like, you know, James's dad, I'm sorry. You know, I'll like say it on the stage. You know what I mean? Like, forget about my parents being there.
That's hilarious. So I want to talk to you because you inspired me to go out and reach out to do some weird things, which led to the Alaska trip that David Studebaker and I went on, that Chris Cope's about to go on in August. And I'm going to talk to him when he comes back from it, cause I want to hear his thoughts, cause it's a unique place. But you booked all these breweries. You did a bunch of brewery tours, which is very unique. I mean, it's not super unique as like, oh, nobody's ever done it before, but it's unique that somebody's, that you've strung them together to do a lot of up and down the West Coast.
Yeah.
You know, Boston is the one in Arkansas that you're going to do. Is that at a brewery too? Or is that a comedy club?
No, that's a comedy club.
Okay. So yeah. And then the other one is, what was the other one? Arkansas and.
Oh, what I have coming up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So August 31st through September 4th, I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas, but then I have Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska. Those are brewery tours. And that's September 15th and 16th. And then Boston's a brewery. Yeah.
And see, that's the thing, that those are not traditionally places where you would think stand-up would be, right? Like, if I thought about that, I'd think, oh, musical acts would do better at a brewery. But you've proven, and also Stephanie Clark has also proven out here, that breweries are great for comedy. And I just kind of want to know, like, the history of how you got that started. Like, what made you think, like, I should reach out to a brewery? How do you get that process started? Because that's a difficult thing for a comedian to do. First of all, to get those going. And secondly, to string them together to be able to constantly have work off of it, you know?
Well, it started with wineries, actually.
Oh, okay.
Years and years and years. It probably, I would say maybe 8 to 10 years ago. Because my sister lives in Northern California, kind of close to the vineyards. She's a giant fan of wine, her and her husband. My wife is a giant fan of wine tastings and stuff like that. So I just went one day to, you know, what we should do, we should combine this, you know what I mean? Like, I think it really hit me one day when I was reaching out to Airbnb, because Airbnb has not only places to stay, but they have Airbnb experience.
Okay.
So if you go to Airbnb, you'll be like stays and you can, you know, book a house. But if you click on experience, whatever city you're going to, they will show you things to do. And I thought this would be great to sell tickets to comedy shows. So I'll advertise on Airbnb when people are traveling. But Airbnb was so strict about who they let. And it cannot just be something that they can get anywhere. It can't be like a comedy show ticket. My band is playing. It's got to be like educational and experience. You know, like we learned how to make pots out of clay type of stuff. So, but I mean, I'm sure that sounds fun if you and the wife are, you know, traveling for, I don't know. I would do that with my wife, but, they gave me the idea when they go, you have to have unique ideas, like an experience they can't get anywhere else. And that I go, wine tasting and stand-up comedy should go great together, because that's not something that you would pair together. You go out wine tasting, which is great. It's a lot of fun. You sit in a cellar sometimes, or an outdoor venue, whatever they got. You taste all these wines. But why wouldn't you have a stand-up comic?
Yeah.
You know, put on a whole comedy show. So I actually did have some success doing that. I stopped doing it for a little while. And then I started up again when craft beer became the new thing. Wine tasting. You can go beer tasting. You can sit down at a brewery and they'll be like, here's our 6 beers on a flight. Yeah. And you'll taste beers and people will, you know, I like that one. And then buy the 6-pack or the, what do they call it? The growler of it.
Oh, the growler. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then my other sister, who lives here in Southern California, is heavily involved in that world. She has a beer account. She's like, if you're a beer person, like if you're plugged into that world, you'll know my sister. Like she's she's a Sicilian beer kitten. Like that's her account. I swear to God that's her Instagram handle. So that's her handle. And she, it's huge. Like she will have people sending her beer to take pictures of it. Wow. And stuff like that. Yeah. It's a big account. So like, if you're in the beer world in Southern California, a brewery, you know her. So, I thought to myself, like, maybe I'll pair up with her. You know what I mean? Well, which we never did, by the way. I thought like, she knows about beer. She can teach people how it's made as they're tasting it. Then we do a comedy show. Now they're learning something. We can go to Airbnb, which I never did.
Right.
Never did. Airbnb is just way too strict and difficult to get your event on there. But, and then the pandemic hit and I had to cancel a bunch of dates. But then in 2021, I started hitting those places again. Hey, so you want to get that date again? And I just have worked with some really great places that I will continue to work with them. I mean, Why not, dude? Why not?
Yeah. And what's the hardest part about that? Because you're going to a venue that's not a traditional comedy club, right? So then now there's extra things involved, mics, speakers, all those kind of things that you either have to provide or you have to make sure that they can let you use or have connected to their system, whatever it is. And then you have to book everything yourself. You have to travel there, all that stuff. What's the hardest part about? Like, what's the thing that always at the last minute, you're always like, oh, this thing could go wrong. Like, what's the biggest thing? Is it other comedians usually or what?
So the hardest thing is always getting people there. But yeah, that's not what you're asking. You're asking about.
Well, yeah, that's hard for every, everything, even comedy clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the hardest thing is that you're dealing with people that aren't used to comedy events.
Okay.
So when you go to a comedy club, the managers know what they're doing.
Right.
And the staff knows what they're doing. They know when to take a drink order. They know when to close the check because the headliner got the light. They know how the room should look. When you're doing a brewery or a bar show or something like that, and you're counting on them to have everything ready for you when you get there, have another thing coming. You got another thing coming. They're gonna have the chairs way too far apart from each other, so the laughs aren't gonna travel right. They're going to have the tables in the wrong place. And then what bothers me the most is, like, I don't mind doing the work, dude. I do a lot of work. I'll even get there early or the day before, and I help you set the whole room. I don't care to do any of that stuff. What bothers me the most is when I show up to perform, don't make me do nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm there to give them a good show, and that's all I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on my jokes, my set, make sure the show runs good. Besides that, like, if somebody comes up to me and says, like, here's my ticket, and I'm like, I ain't scanning your ticket. I ain't taking you to your seat. You got to talk to the staff. And so I ain't get you a beer. You know what I mean? Like, you'll have people that don't know what it's like working with comedians. So they don't know these things. They're not jerks. They just don't know. So I do try to go early, make sure everything's right. Do a mic test. If you're doing a venue that is not a comedy venue, do a mic test. Even though they told you, don't worry about it. I have a PA system here. I got the speaker here. We got the microphone here. You know how many times I've gone there and it was showtime, and the comic walked up there, mic didn't work because they didn't. It was sitting in their cellar for 2 years. No one used it.
Yeah.
So I travel with a microphone and extra cable my backpack. I've had it. Which, by the way, I travel with them in my car too. I always got a microphone in my car. It came in handy when I was taping my special. Dude, I was taping my special. We were setting up the room and everything, and I was like, I want an extra mic in the audience, hidden somewhere, so we can pick up laughter. And I was like, fuck, do I need to go to a Radio Shack and, like, buy a mic? And I was like, wait, I always carry one in my car. And I had
there you
it.
Go.
So things like that, you know, so I will try to, I mean, I always say this with stand up, you have to create your standards and your boundaries, and no one's going to do it for you. People will do to you what you allow them to do to you, especially in the stand-up world. If you allow someone to make you clean the bathroom club for 5 minutes of stage time, 3 minutes of stage time, hey, that's paying your dues. I've done it. There's no shame in it. But after 3 years, you got to eventually promote yourself, and you only promote yourself by setting boundaries for yourself, and you don't go back on your word. You don't want to become a feature, and you don't want to MC no more. Then you're going to have to promote yourself by not taking any more MC work. And it is a sacrifice. So I make the rules of, I have my rules that I tell the venue in the beginning. These are my rules. And if they don't agree, I won't do it there. And part of those, part of those rules are, staff is your responsibility. Seating the people is your responsibility. I will say, if you don't have a microphone and speaker that works, I will rent one. Like, I will pay for that, but you got to pick it up. You got to set it up, like, all that stuff. I do not want you to do other comedy shows there.
Yeah.
If you, or at least if you've done a comedy show recently, I go, like, I can't do it. I can't do it. The whole point of, the whole selling point is, how cool is a comedy show at a brewery while we do wine tasting? Now, if you do it every week, it isn't that cool. You know what I mean? Like, I'm coming once a year and I'm bringing LA comics, and you're going to see a good show. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the whole incentive.
I mean, and that's the thing is, you're making an experience. What you're doing is experience. And that's the same thing that we did for Alaska, right? We went to a place that never has comedy. The closest comedy club isn't even in the closest city to where we were at. And we went there and did comedy, and it was amazing, and people loved it, and people came out because it's an experience. It never gets done. And what's funny is Chris Cope was supposed to go up at the beginning of August to go up there. And some other venue in the same town did comedy in the end of July, or they're going to do a show in the end of July. So we're like, no, we're moving it to the end of August, beginning of September. And he's going to go for then. But we couldn't, because it would have been week, then week. So you wouldn't have got a big turnout on that second show, you know? So it's amazing.
Dude, my Maui gig canceled.
No.
I was supposed to go to Maui in, I think it was August. And it canceled because the same weekend they had me booked, Joe Coy
Oh yeah, yeah, no, yeah,
was booked right at the big theater. So yeah. I was doing the little club, and then there's a big theater. And
were you doing Blue Note? Was it Blue Note?
No, I don't know what it was. No, I don't think so. I know the guy who books these, like the one guy who books any room in Comedy Wise in Maui. But apparently, Joe Coy has his own holiday there. Like that's how big he is in Maui. Like there's wow. Joe Coy Day.
Wow.
And he was doing three shows at this theater. They're sold out. I'm like, I'm not even gonna bother, dude.
No,
not even
gonna bother. No way.
So yeah.
What are you gonna do? Like a month later? You gonna come a month later? Or, what are they?
They might. But they already had other people scheduled, so that we might try to do something in October, but we'll see.
That sounds awesome, though. But yeah, Joe Coy, I mean, he's amazing. Plus, he has a new movie about to come out, so you know, it's gonna be awesome.
It's a small island, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know he was dating Chelsea Handler, by the way. I didn't know that.
I saw that the other day. I think for a while now, a couple of years now, I would say.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, okay. So yeah, that's interesting. But that's the thing is, comedians. I think non-comedy people sometimes don't realize how hard that is. It's like, no, people will come. No, you don't understand. If there was a guy here last week telling jokes, they came and they hated it, right? See, that guy sucked.
Or there's that too. Yeah.
Now they're like, I'm never going to do that again. Why would I waste my time? Last week sucked. That guy sucked. Whatever it was, that girl, that person sucked. And so they're going to not do it. That's the hardest part of comedy is one comedian can ruin it for everyone else by having a bad show. Not that they're having a bad show because they bomb, but just maybe the material wasn't right for the venue, or they weren't right for the venue, or it just wasn't a good fit. And that happens sometimes, you know? Why I think it's hard for comedy clubs in LA too, to constantly be packed. Like the Comedy Store is constantly packed because everyone thinks Dave Chappelle's going to drop in there at any moment.
And he might.
Or Kevin Hart's going to roll in there, or Joe Rogan's going to roll in. So everyone is going to keep going because they think that. But Flappers isn't packed every night. The Improv isn't packed every night. The, you know, Laugh Factory's not packed every night. It's just not. There are a lot of those places are not packed. Ha Ha's not packed every night. Comedy Chateau's not packed every night.
Yeah, everybody's got a gimmick. Everybody's got their gimmick. It's like, you know, you got to work an angle. Like they got Latino night.
Yeah.
They got, you know what I mean? Their
whole Chocolate Sundays or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Monday night taco deal, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, stuff like that, man. It's people do not realize what. And then the odds are, a lot of the venues that I won't work with anymore, they're continuing to do comedy after I left. And I told them, like, obviously you could do whatever you want, but I'm not going to come back here if you do that, because if you do comedy so often, like I want to be the once a year thing,
right?
Annually, or even once or twice a year. What happens is, like, they're not going to get great comics in from all over the world. They're not going to get like a flown in LA comic every week. They're going to, if you're doing comedy at often, it's going to be the locals. And I don't, no offense to locals, I know there's a lot of great comics everywhere, but when you run out of good comics after a while, that especially want to work for free, then I'll start being free. You know, I charge for tickets. Then they're just like, no, it's Wednesday's comedy night. It's free. Now you got people who are just in the bar who came to drink and didn't even want to see comedy.
Yep.
And they're not seeing the best comedy. And so then the people who are normally go to that are not going to pay my $20 ticket price.
Yep. That's exactly right. They
think it's not a good show. They're going to be loud drunks in the back. And no, that's not what I deliver when you come see me.
Exactly. Exactly right. The same thing for Alaska. We were very upfront of like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to help you stage a room. We're going to help set up. It went great because there was support from the venue, right? If the venue didn't support us, it wasn't going to work. We did a church the next day. Same thing. There was support from the venue. It turned out well. They raised the money they need. We got paid. Everyone was happy. It was awesome. And they were like, can you come back? When can you come back? People want this. You know, the only problem that we had was, it was the nice time of year in Alaska, so more people started to go outside, go camping, hunting, all that stuff.
Okay.
So it was less people, but they're like November, you know, October, November, January, February, not December, January, February, March, April. Those are your times. Come. I'm like, okay. Isn't there snow there? And they're like, yeah, that's where people want to go because they don't want to be stuck in their house. They want to go somewhere else.
I'm telling you, it's the best. If it rains or snows, your comedy room will be packed.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I was like, no, people don't want to do that because I don't want to go anywhere whenever it's snowing or it was snowing or raining in Southern California. I'm like, I'm staying home. I'm not going.
No, but that's what people want to do, man. Yeah, they were in all day. They want to go out. They go to the movies. They want to go where they can sit indoors and be entertained.
That's exactly right. So that's what we're working on. I learned a lot from you because I saw you doing this and I was like, okay, there's an opportunity here for other stuff. And I think I'm working on trying to do a whole Alaska thing where we go up to like Anchorage and Juneau and all those, and then hit, you know, back up to Fairbanks and Delta Junction and come back, like just kind of this loop and see if we can get it to work. That's the goal, to try to start getting that happening, you know, in the next year or two. I hope that it works out. I would love for it to work out. You know, it'd be awesome just to do, you know, 2 weeks of shows for comedians where we fly up comedians, they do this journey, then they come back and they get paid a good amount of money to go up there and come back, you know, a couple G's to go up there and come back.
I hope so, dude. I hope it works out great. Yeah.
But then awesome. Here's my problem. Then I sound like a booker, right? Then I'm like, hey, you want to go up to Alaska? And I'm like, I don't want to be that, right? I don't want to be that guy. And that's the hard part, right? If you do that stuff, you start to become a booker, and I don't want to be a booker. I don't want to be a booker either.
Yeah. And that's another reason I try to steer away from it. But on the other hand, it has given me opportunities to,
right.
That's the other thing. That's why I'm going to a place once a year.
Yeah.
Cause every time I go, it's me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a booker. I'm bringing me, I'm headlining that shit. And then as far as openers, I'm either, that's another thing I ran into an issue with is, you ask me, do I have a hard time with the comics? No, they've, knock on wood, they've been like responsible and showed up on time so far. but I have a hard time with, because it's very expensive to travel right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't afford to pay for the comics flight, hotel, you know what I mean? And pay them.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you're featuring, you get paid $100 a show, but I'm paying you, the flight is $500. You know what I mean? And we're not making that. Like, we're not. So that's been difficult. So the places I've chosen to go is because I either have a fan base there or no friends and family there I can crash. Or if I take a comics because they're from there and they have some place to go, you know what I mean? So it has been a lot, but on the other hand, I have taken comics and given them opportunity and to open, and then I actually do like helping out the locals too. Like, they don't get to do stuff like that often, like quality stage time. I'm sure they have little rooms and stuff, but I'm like, dude, no, I need you to do 20 minutes. It's quality stage time. And they're like, oh, hell yeah. And I'm paying you, you know?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I just got asked, like I said, the last week to go do, you know, host a show, do 20 minutes and host. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. You know, one, I like hosting. Hosting is probably my favorite thing in the world to do. I know that it's a lot of comedians hate it because they feel like they're getting the short on the stick, but I feel like you get to set the pace. You get to set the room. And that for me is the most fun part of stand-up, is setting the pace, setting the room. Because if you do a great job, everybody else's job is so much easier.
It's definitely challenging. It's not the easiest job at all.
No, not at all. It's hard, but it's the most, for me, it's the most fun. You're setting the pace. You're mm-hmm. setting it up, and when people laugh because you did a great job, every comedian that comes after you has it a little bit easier. And you know, and then if someone bombs, you have to reset the room. You just have to. And you know, and that, but
and challenging can be fun. That's why it's fun, because fun things can be challenging. Stand up is fun because it's challenging.
It's challenging. Well, yeah, because not everybody could do it, right? You know, if everybody could do it, everyone would be a stand up comedian and we would be out of jobs, you know. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. A part of being an artist is failing. And I love it so much. Like, people, dude, I'm editing my special right now. So we are in post production of the special. Okay.
All right.
And I'm watching it with Kevin. You know, he directed it, the whole production crew. We're watching it together and we're editing it, and they're all laughing as we watch it. And I'm watching it and I don't laugh. But when there's a moment where nobody laughs, that's when I'm dying laughing, bro. When there was a joke that was so, like, it disturbed them a little, or was a little too dark, a little too edgy for them, or they kind of highbrow, they kind of like, oh, like the, oh. That's when I was dying laughing. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I go, look at that guy's face. Look at how he reacted. Yeah. Like, that's what I like feeling uncomfortable.
That, I mean, and that's what comedy's about, like, is making the crowd a little uncomfortable in your setup and then giving them that punchline that lets them release that and go, oh, he was just joking. Ha ha ha. You know, like, that's what it's all about. That's
don't
the best
get me
part.
Wrong. It feels amazing to kill.
Oh, of course.
But it doesn't feel as good if you didn't earn it. Like, if you if you failed at that joke 900 times and now it's killing, like, it just feels so much better.
Yes. I know. I redeem myself because I think I told you, we talked about this. We went and had lunch one day, and I told you that the FTB joke, the Feed the Bears joke that I do, bombed terribly in Alaska. It was the only time ever in my career that joke has ever failed. Ever. Ever. I went and did it last week. Boom! Everyone loved it. I know every beat of that joke, and I know every response to every beat of that joke, and everything happened like clockwork. And I was like, it's not the joke. It was the crowd. And I don't say blame the crowd ever, but the crowd just didn't like that joke, and that's okay. They're allowed to not like the joke. Yeah. But I know that joke works, and it murdered, and it was perfect. And I was like,
yeah, I know you're not supposed to blame the crowd, and I agree with it. In some ways, I agree with it. I agree with it in the way that it lets the artist know to always look of how you could have done better.
Right.
But to say never blame the crowd is one of the dumbest things, because there are so many factors.
Of course.
People say, like, never blame the crowd, bro. Yeah, that's a great motivational thing to say.
Yeah.
But you telling me if I'm doing a Trump joke in I'm not supposed to, I'm not supposed to say effort. It's the clean
I'll
podcast.
I edit.
Okay. That. Okay. So if I'm doing don't worry, I'll edit out Trump. That's the part you edit out. Leave the F word in, but take that T word out. So, but if I do a Trump joke in, I don't know. Let's say,
Midwest, just the Midwest probably.
Yeah. You know, anywhere in the Midwest. And then I do the same exact Trump joke in Portland, Oregon. It's not going to do well in one of those places.
Right.
So don't tell me that don't blame the audience. The audience is different every city everywhere, you go to. Right. You have different groups of people. And then if you have a really cool group of people that are in a liberal town, and they also may not feel like they want to laugh because they are around people who are, they might hold it in a little bit more. There's so many factors, but you should always be saying, how could I have handled it better though? So that's what it is.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I didn't realize how they would respond to that joke. And I really went there thinking, this joke, they're going to love. And I even said before, like, this is the joke. They're going to love this joke. Everyone loves this joke. And it's going to murder in Alaska. They're going to be like, you know, nothing.
I wonder why, dude. I wonder why. No, I mean, serious. I wonder why it didn't work there.
Because someone told me afterwards, like, people literally go missing there. And that's not funny because you made fun of basically people disappearing. Like, you think it's funny that people could get eaten by bears, where here it really could happen. And I was like, yeah,
that makes sense.
But I like, none of that,
they're like,
process
too soon,
to me
bro.
In the
we're still out there for my cousin Bob.
I mean,
still a search party right now as we speak.
And then afterwards I was like, oh, that makes sense. So then when I did the second show in Alaska, I didn't do that joke, even though when I told the person who was, I run the show, after I got off my set and I told them that story, they're like, oh, you should have done that joke. Everyone would have loved it here. It was a different reaction, but I didn't want to take that chance because I'd already failed in this area with that joke.
Yeah.
But then I did it the other
night.
It may
have just been that crowd too. Like the early show, right? It may have been, they were a little uptight.
No, because we had fun. Like, I was going, like, we had a lot of stuff. It is what it is.
Nice, James.
Yeah. Yeah, don't talk about people getting eaten by bears.
Yeah.
Barry got eaten by bears.
Yeah, it just got too real.
Yeah. It was like that. So I was like, okay, all right, that's fine. But I knew. And when I did the joke last week, and I know every part of that joke. I know every reaction you're supposed to get. I know that when I say a certain line, women in the audience always go, I know how that joke works, and they hit every single beat, and I was like, okay, it wasn't the joke. It was just the situation, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is stuff like that, you know. Like, right now, the thing I'm working on, do we have time for me to tell you about a new premise?
Yeah.
It is, I don't know why, dude, I'm coming up with so much new stuff right now, and it's so offensive. It's so mean. I don't know why that's where my brain's going right now. It's just so mean.
Sometimes.
And there's really not so many punchlines yet. It's just a lot of mean, dude. It's just a lot of mean. So one of the, okay, I'm gonna tell you two, and they're not dirty,
right? Okay,
they're just mean.
Okay, mean's okay.
Okay, so I want to shame people who shame me for shaming.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah. Like, I'm going after people who get mad at me when I go after people. Okay. Okay.
Just a bunch of hypocrites. Everyone's
a hypocrite. For example, because you hear that a lot. We live in a society where we're not allowed to be honest anymore because you could hurt someone's feelings. In other words, you're shaming them. Yeah. And I can think of many ways that shaming helps the world go round and make it a better place. Example one, I used to be 250 pounds. I am now 170. You know why? Shaming. my guy friends telling me, like, oh, here comes fatty, is a wonderful diet plan. It's the best diet. Okay. Shaming. You got to shame people. So here goes another example. Okay. Here goes another example is, we've got to start telling people that they're bad. We can't just let everyone think they're so good at everything. You know what I mean? Because we're afraid that we're shaming them. Guys, we are only doing this now, right? If we did this a long time ago, if like we were afraid to tell people, we would not have Van Gogh. We would not, there would be no Shakespeare. There'd be no Van Gogh. There'd be no Mona Lisa, because we would not be weeding out the junk. And you can imagine the word I'm really using. So, yeah. You know what I mean? We need to filter out the bad things. That's how you know what a masterpiece is. Right. So, but now you have like pop-up art galleries, and we're all supposed to just pretend that this is beautiful art. And it's not. It's not good. It's not Van Gogh. You know what I mean? And we are afraid of shaming, that we are not, it's hurting our culture. Like, we're not going to have beautiful things anymore. We're going to have horrible murals of Kobe Bryant around the city. And no one has the balls to say, this is not a good painting.
It's just like a weird shaped Kobe. It looks like he has Down syndrome. Yeah. Yes. I've seen that mural, by the way. I know what mural you're talking about. There's all of them. Not all of them. There's a few that are good, but there's a bunch of them that, like, Kobe looks off. He looks a little drunk. A lot. Like,
the one down on Sunset Boulevard by the Comedy Store is really bad.
Yeah.
There's a couple, dude. There's a couple that are really bad, but I'm not just, I don't want to just pick on Kobe, but that's just,
I know, but I know what you're talking about, because I've seen them and you're like, ooh, really?
And nobody wants to say to the person who was trying to do something nice that you're not good. You're not good. You know what I mean?
Go back to stenciling, Billy. Go back to stenciling.
So I do kind of, but I mean, it's not so funny. It's just meme, but it's true. Like, we, you know, like, if everyone could write, we would have no Shakespeare. It would just be what we have, the internet. That's what we have. We have the internet. It's just a random guy who's going to write a story about a corn chowder recipe. It's like, dude, just give me the recipe. Like, why do I got to read this whole story about your grandmother? You know what I mean? Like, everyone's a writer. Everyone's a writer. Like, I just, you know, give me the meat and potatoes. But no, like, we had, that's the reason we have Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yep.
That's why we have Daniel Day-Lewis. And it's because someone was saying no to the other 499 actors that showed up.
No.
And as sad as that is, I know what rejection feels like. It hurts, but it is the truth that will let you move on to find your thing. And also, this is what reminded me of it. You're not truly an artist until you failed.
Yep.
That's 100%. How you're an artist. You don't create the masterpiece until you've failed making it 99 other times.
Yep.
If you got everything right away at the right time, the first try, it's not a masterpiece. It's just people don't want to tell you it's bad. So I love it. There's one. And then the second joke. Sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
This one's really mean, bro. But it's funny. But it's funny. Okay. So you ever driving along and you see one of those baby on board bumper stickers?
I hate them.
So the first part of the joke, what am I supposed to do with this information? Like, okay. Like, oh, thank God you told me, because I was about to drive my vehicle into the side of your car. Now I won't. You know what I mean? Like, what is this sign for? That's the first thing. And then so it's useless, but here's where you actually need a baby on board sign. An airplane. This is where the baby on board sign should be. And it should be there when I'm booking the flight. That little yellow baby on board. I want to know exactly where on that little plane map, where he's sitting. Okay. That's what I need the baby on board sign.
And that's hilarious. If someone in the airline created that in their app, they would kill. They would win because
no, they won't, because there would be an empty plane with one mother and one baby that has a whole 747 to herself.
I want the airline. I want an airline to just start banning babies and be like, listen, no children. This is adults only flight. That's Soul Plane, I believe. I believe it's Soul Plane that does that.
That'd be great. Yeah. Here's the third part of the joke, which is really mean, and you may have to bleep one part out. Is have you seen the bumper stickers that say "baby up in this"?
Oh yeah. I have seen that.
B word.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I'm helping you not have to edit so much. baby up in this B word. If you have that bumper sticker on your car, you're raising a horrible human being. Like, I guarantee you that kid is not going to grow up to be well established and contribute to society. Like, I'm not saying that the kid deserves to die in a car accident, but I am saying if it did happen, it's probably better for the world in the future. Like, if you have a baby up in this bee on your car and you're driving around with it, that the kid you're raising is just gonna grow up to be another dude who's like, why'd I get banned off Facebook? You know what I mean? Because have you ever seen people who complain about getting banned off Facebook? Go look at their Facebook. It says you curse like a truck driver. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have freedom of speech, but you should have common sense. You know what I mean? About who's driving behind you, what you should and shouldn't say. Is it funny between you and your friends if you say baby up in this? Sure. Is it nice for the grandma driving behind you? You know what I mean? Like, you just have, you're not raising a kid with values. Anyway, this is my new premises.
Those are good. Those are good. That's a kid that grows up to call his mom that word, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I guarantee you, you're not raising a well-established child.
No, not at all. No. That kid's definitely going to juvenile hall. Let's not lie to ourselves.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And then they're gonna have they're gonna be in a van that says convict on board.
They got an orange jumpsuit on. Well, my mom. I was up in that.
Yes. The stuff I'm coming up with is so mean, and it's because I really think the worst of people when I go out in the world, and everything everybody does bothers me. You know,
you got to stay off Facebook.
Yeah, I try. I really try.
I have no Facebook. I was like, I'm done with it. I can't deal with
it. It's awful. My Instagram automatically sends everything to Facebook just so I keep it alive, but I'm not on there.
Yeah, no, I can't deal with that. Well, thank you, Agostino, for sharing a lot of your knowledge about booking stuff and some of your new premises. I'm excited. I can't wait to hear that stuff. And then do you have a date for the release of your album and your special and stuff?
No date yet, but it's still in post. We are, dude, it takes a lot. We have six camera angles. And so the last 2 weekends have just been in the studio going and watching it and going like, cut to that camera there. Now cut to that camera there. So we are, the last 2 weeks we've worked on it, we are about 40 minutes into the special. Done.
Right. That's going to be an hour total?
Yeah. I mean, we've edited some stuff out, so it might end up being like 50. But yeah, there's, dude, I always end my shows with stories. So there's three stories at the end of my special. So that's all I have left. That's just the editing. Then it has to go to color correction. Then it has to go to the audio, which, by the way, if you know a good sound engineer, let me know.
I don't.
Oh, okay. I'm sure there's a ton of great sound engineers. I have had people refer me to some. It's just, it's very expensive. So what I really mean is, if there's a sound engineer out there, give me a deal. Yeah.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. Where can people find you? Where can they find all your stuff and your podcast?
Please follow me on Instagram, because I'm on there the most and I put most of my content there. It's at Augustino Soida and everything. But I have a lot of great shows. I have Homeschool Podcast. James just did it. I have the Movie Stash Podcast, which is me and my friend reviewing movies, new movies, old movies. And there's movie trivia at the end. Whoever wins movie trivia gets to choose the next movie that we force the other one to watch. The 5-minute episodes of that show is on Instagram. If you want the full discussion, which is about a half hour usually, you go on, you watch them on YouTube. I could really use some love on YouTube. So please go subscribe over there. It's great content, stand-up, movie reviews, me cooking stuff. It's great. Everything is at Homeschooled Entertainment. That's the name of my YouTube channel. Or just search my name and you'll find it.
There you go. Perfect. Thank you, everybody, for checking us out. Please go like, subscribe to Augustino stuff. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube if you're there. Or go to Instagram at the Clean Comedy Podcast. And please like and subscribe on the podcast as well. And leave us some reviews. We're growing. Things are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and snowballing. So we're getting there. And then if you're going to be in Texas, if you live around Texas, San Antonio area, Darren Carter and I, he's been on the podcast before, Darren Carter, the Party Starter, and I will be doing 3 shows out there in San Antonio. We're very excited for that. So thank you guys so much. And nice, have a good one. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Later. Later. Bye.